shot glass and slid it over in front of me and said, no, do a shot with me. And I was like, I don't drink hard liquor. And this young guy that was sitting next to me that was drinking beer said, I'll take it. And I said, sure. And I slid it right over to him. And the guy tensed up that bought me the drink. And the young guy, I mean, he looked barely old enough to drink, took the shot.
No. Baldy and, also said, no, that's for him. That's for him.
Yeah. And, he protested, but the kid just took the shot. And he had just finished a big meal. And the kid was sitting there, and just like moments after he takes a shot, he just projectile vomits.
Oh, man.
I mean, as if almost like it was Epicac in the glass instead of Jägermeister.
What happened to the guy that bought the drink? Did he disappear?
He disappeared into the crowd, and I never saw him again. He just disappeared. So
yeah, let that be a lesson to you. You know, unless it's either David or I buying you the drink, that's you politely decline everything from here on out. Well, okay, now let's start.
Well, Jimmy, I'll just also kick in quickly that
sure
I have had numerous severe death threats, including personal death threats from the Rothschilds to me through four different sources, saying that if I keep doing this, they're going to try to take me out. And they would if they could. And that's one of the things that we got to say for all the skeptics out there is this is a spiritual battle. And the good guys that are in this battle are what you could think of as the archangels, seraphim, and cherubim in the Bible. And so if you follow positive spiritual practices, these threatening things can happen that are scary, but they can't actually take you out.
Well, let me just say this. If you stop getting those emails or those warnings or those drinks or whatever, then that means you don't matter. Always remember that. If I stop getting emails, because I get 10 a day, you know, we're going to shut down your show. We're going to shut down your website. You need to stop. You know what? That just means we're on pitch. That's all that means, you know? And so always remember that. If you stop getting the emails, that's when you worry. Okay? As long as you get them, that just means that you matter. And that being said, Corey, tell me how, back when you were 6 years old, for the audience, and it's just an amazing event. How did you get from Texas to the LOC? Oh, by the way, audience, we're going to be talking about the LOC. We'll tell you what that is. The ICC. We'll get into that. We'll get into the Super Federation. All of that will be explained. Fear not. So we're going to start here with your first trip from Texas to the LOC. What happened that day?
Well, that the trips off world didn't start until later on. When I was six, they would bring me to Carswell Air Force Base and a couple other locations that were usually closed down or abandoned commercial real estate buildings that they took our group to. Do training and testing, and this training and testing was to get this group of children as they were growing up to a point to where we would all be drafted off into various different programs. Some of us would go into the secret space program, some of us would go into military black ops, and some of us would go to work for some of these syndicates that people call the Cabal and the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm. And from Carswell, wasn't Weren't you transported underground? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yes.
So tell me how that went.
Yes, there. I don't want to bring this. I've received emails from a few people that worked at the base during that time frame, and I described the back gate that we entered in through, drove crossed a runway, and then drove parallel to a runway, and then we drove into a hangar where cars parked, and on the wall was a giant wooden model that had Corsair written on it, and it was a giant bomber on it. And then we would, I was told that by one of these people that it was a security or one of the headquarters buildings. We walked back to the back, and there was a large service elevator that took us down a few floors, and then we were in a kind of, during that time frame was the Cold War, and in case of nuclear attacks, they had below ground facilities. And then we would walk down a series of halls, one of which was guarded, a couple of doors that were guarded, and by one man sitting at a table, one soldier or airman. And then we'd pass through those doors and go, and there would be further elevators that would take you deeper down, and that would take you down to the underground tram system.
Was it the same time or the same steps every single time? Was it always the Carswell, the same hallways, same elevators? Did you ever go to a different facility, or was it always?
No, that they would take us to different buildings quite often, and a lot of the times they were larger commercial buildings that were not in use, that they had set up for, had their equipment set up in for training or testing, different, whatever scenario they needed them for. And locations could be closer to where we lived. I lived in the North Dallas area, so it was always about a 50-minute drive to Carswell Air Force Base. So it was a little bit of a drive when they would take us in the vans. And so they had facilities that I guess were mobile, that they could move around and set up in different commercial buildings that they had access to. And they would make use of those that were closer to different groups.
Were you transported underground outside of the state of Texas, or do you think that you were always inside of Texas?
No, we were definitely transported outside of Texas. There were no signs that said you here or there, but there would be a dramatic change in people's accents and demeanors and looks. So there were times that we definitely seemed to be in places like Australia or Europe, and or under Europe and Australia. And one of the things that was mentioned, I remember mentioned when I was young, was that you know how, like, out at sea, there's a certain amount of miles from shore, it's international waters, there's no national laws that you have to worry about. It's international laws. The same goes for a certain depth underground. And a certain amount of depth underground you go, you're not considered in that country anymore.
Oh, that's interesting. I never quite looked at it that way, but I suppose the same would apply. Yeah. If you're in the ISS, what country are you in? I never even thought about that. That's a good point. Corey, your first trip off-world, tell us about that, and where do you think you were when that happened?
Well, before I was actually somewhat drafted, although I did sign papers before I was legally old enough to, I was already being utilized as an intuitive empath, and I had been brought to off-world to these Super Federation meetings in a support role, to where I was there with two other. There was always three intuitive empaths. They always had three of us to triangulate for triangulation purposes. They had us at the Super Federation conference because human beings of Earth finally got a delegation seat at the Super Federation. Many of the ET groups there did not like this, were not approving of this, but nonetheless, it was a delegation role that many of these different secret Earth government leaders would rotate into. And there would be a delegate that would rotate in and sit in the chair, and then there would be three intuitive empaths, and we would rotate in as well. So I wasn't always there. They would rotate us in, and we would sit to the side and to the front of this delegate. And then the delegate had an advisor that would stand over their left shoulder, and that would be the delegation group that would be allowed on the floor.
Where did this delegation meet?
It was on a it's a space station, a very advanced space station that is inside of a temporal rift or temporal bubble. And we would have to fly into it. It was out by the gas giants, out in the around the orbits of the gas giants.
Neptune, Uranus, Jupiter. Okay, well, let's back up, though. I want to know how you got there. We jumped ahead. We jumped way ahead. Okay. So how did you get there? That's okay. That's where we were.
Okay. Now we're going to get to where we start first going to the LOC. We would be portaled to the LOC through the there were the underground tram system that would portal us, and there was also a area that they would take us to through the underground tram system that you would walk through. But both of them would end up at the LOC, where you would then get in to a spacecraft, embark onto a spacecraft, and then fly from the LOC to this temporal rift or bubble that pretty much hid or protected this.
No, I understand. And the LOC is the Lunar Operation Command. That's what, or center, command center.
Right.
And how long were you there before you were transported out? Did you spend a month there, a day there, an hour?
No, these were short trips. These would be like the meetings would be anywhere from like 3-5 hours, to including the meeting and the travel time.
So tell me, it
would be like I guess you would call it a day trip.
A day trip. So what was the atmosphere like? I'm picturing, you know, the commander up talking to an audience, you know, a classroom, a room, kind of like the movie Top Gun. You know, I'm kind of picturing that, where you're being addressed on what this mission is going to be. Did you have, cafeterias? What was the daily life like there? How were you treated when you were there?
When we were at the LOC?
Yes.
Well, when we were at the LOC, at this point, we were just escorted directly to the craft. We, as intuitive empaths in a support role, we were not given any information. We were there just to detect any type of, deception or danger. And when we were there, when we were at the Super Federation conferences, we didn't understand anything that was going on. We didn't understand. We had no idea what was going on.
Why was that? Was there a language barrier? Something lost in translation?
Yes. The beings that were there didn't interface with us directly, which is what they call telepathic one-on-one communication. And there was also a common language that was spoken that was very monotone, a very strange language that each delegate, when they would rotate up to the podium and talk, they all spoke this language while there was another being that stood up and did some strange sort of sign language that looked almost like Native American sign language. It was very peculiar. And we would sit there and hold these devices in our hands that just looked like a piece of plexiglass.
Mm-hmm.
And they were called smart glass pads. And you would put them on your hands, and you could see your fingertips through them. And they were activated with consciousness or with a mental component. And then they would go opaque, and then whatever language you speak, you would begin to see information appearing in that language, and you would have access to a database of information. And they would have us browsing this database of information to keep our conscious mind busy and also gathering information from the database while our subconscious mind or higher self and training kicked in so that our intuitive empath abilities were picking up anything in the room that we should be picking up.
That's interesting. I'm picturing something like the United Nations, right, where you have all of
exactly.
these different cultures together. Were you, did you have some type of headset or some type of translation device?
Nope.
What about everybody else? Were they all speaking the same language, or was somebody translating for them?
What is interesting is I did not know until quite recently, when I got to sit in one of those chairs myself, that when you sit in that chair, you understand the language that is being spoken.
Ah, I got you. And what were they? This is one of the crucial things I've always wanted to ask you, what was it that they were discussing? Were they discussing issues in the universe, or were they discussing Earth?
They were discussing this grand experiment, which we are a major part of. And of this group, there was usually 40 there. Sometimes there were more, up to 60, a little over 60 different beings, groups there, and that were working together. And they had 22 different programs that, since our inception, or some would say our creation, they have been genetically engineering and altering us. They have been interfering in our social and spiritual affairs. Mm-hmm. And they are also a part of this grand experiment. They, some of these groups are incarnating into our society, into human bodies, and they're very much a part of this huge what is called the grand experiment. And this is the overall topic of this experiment.
Sure. Was the same experiment that they are doing here? Are they doing it also on other off-world planets? Is the same thing being replicated across the universe? We're just a small piece of it?
From what I had gathered, this grand experiment is very important to the rest of our galaxy and other galaxies. But I do not know for certain if they are repeating the same experiment. I don't see why they wouldn't on other star systems.
Were you ever able to intermingle or communicate with any other species?
Not when I was in that role. When I was in that role, I was oblivious to what was going on. When they would take us back, we would go through debriefing. Mm-hmm. And the debriefing was very bland because, I mean, we really didn't know much. And then we were sent back. We served our purpose.
Were you... Okay.
Later on, when I became a delegate myself, yes, indeed, I did. The beings there that would ignore me when I was a teenager,
right,
being an intuitive empath support, were now interested in me and interested in interfacing with me, and did so.
How so?
One-on-one, they would interface telepathically.
Would it be about personal issues? Was it about you personally, or was it about, you know, the news back on planet Earth? You know, what was that like?
Well, it was generally about, they were communicating what they are contributing to this grand experiment, or the 22, whatever, if they're a part of one of these 22 experiments or ongoing programs, they would try to interface and give a hard sell about what they're contributing to humanity or the great experiment. But there were some incidents to where they did pick up on personal thoughts and communicated on that level.
That's interesting. Did you feel, I want to actually get back to a personal thought. I'm sure they found that interesting. So don't let Don't let my mind get away from that. Did you ever feel threatened? Did you ever feel like it was a negative atmosphere? I hate to go to the two key words, benevolent, you know, but how did you feel the overall atmosphere was? Was it positive? Was it negative? Did you feel dread? Did you feel okay?
Okay, there was a big difference for when I was with the secret Earth government syndicates and groups as an intuitive empath. There was an obvious feeling of they did not want us there, of disdain, I guess you would say,
mm-hmm.
towards us. But when I was there under a different capacity, there was no angst, anxiety, or negative feelings, or feelings of what you would consider hatred or negativity at all.
When we hear from, and David, jump in here, if you would.
Sure.
There's almost a line in the sand out there about E.T.'s interference being a positive thing, one being a negative thing, a war being waged in between the two of them, fighting over us, not fighting over us. They're here for, you know, they want us to grow and love each other and look at each other and bring down barriers. And then there's the other part that could care less about humanity in general, that we're beneath them. What is the real message? What is really going on?
Well, I think that to try to pick somebody off the surface of Earth and then hold them in front of a group of extraterrestrials and say, this represents people on Earth, this person is Earth, you know. Well, who are you going to pick? You know, you could pick some guy from Skid Row in New York City who's missing most of his teeth and reeks of, you know, beer and puke.
Kind of like me. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good idea. I don't think I would represent Earth too well. Point taken, David. I get it.
So in saying that, I want to say, too, that there are a wide variety of extraterrestrials with a wide variety of agendas. Some of them are more trending positive. Some of them are more trending negative. Some of them are extremely negative. Then that's all kind of in like what you would call a fourth density category, which is the level above our own,
right,
as you progress in your universal evolution. As you get into fifth density and especially sixth density, these groups now become somebody that you're not usually going to see. And one of the things that has been really significant that I want to make sure we cover, because I see how fast we're running out of time.
Yes.
Is the arrival of these massive spheres in our solar system. And I want to point your listeners to something. Everybody's saying, David has no evidence, David has no evidence, okay? I just put up an article, so go to divinecosmos.com, DivineCosmos.com. In less than 2 hours, it's already had 1,500 Facebook likes and over 8,500 hits, okay? This article shows you the film of these spheres from NASA when they were first coming in the late 1990s, including a very dramatic little animated GIF of two spheres colliding with the sun and creating a massive coronal mass ejection immediately afterwards, which NASA says is unrelated. Okay, now, these sphere beings showed up, and it appears that we're finally dealing with somebody a lot higher than fourth density who is here to ultimately restore our planet and get rid of the bad guys and clear us from financial tyranny and free up all this classified technology. And that's really the core of what Corey seems to be doing, is acting as a delegate and a liaison on behalf of these new beings who have completely overturned the apple cart for the space program negative groups that we would call the Illuminati here on Earth.
Well, and certainly everything that you've been talking about over the last couple of years on this program and others, David, and you and I personally talking too as well, about the, you know, the global financial situation and Things certainly seem to have turned upside down over the last week. And it's something I want you to come back on the show in a couple of weeks, and we need to address this directly, if you don't mind.
It's accelerating the